You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 23 Jan. Today in 2018, Trump started his trade war with tariffs on Chinese solar panels and washing machines. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from Cape Town via Gauteng. On the show today, Kenyanyana Scope Prime, the Mr. Price update. I thought another good update, but the market said 3% down. But also, what does he see for the year ahead in consumer stocks? Davina Dorkenham from Regent Business School, global economy at a pivotal point. And Craig Gradage from Gradage Mohr Investments, what's happening to the Sasol BEE scheme in Kinyasa? This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. GDP growth expected to surprise to the upside in 2025, exceeding 2.3%. This as retail and mining sectors shine, but sustaining that will be the challenge without structural reforms. This according to Capital Economics. Business Day, December inflation points to further rate cut. CPI remains at the floor of the SARB's target range, 3%. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.6%, NASDAQ 1.3% higher. Over in the East, mostly green, Sydney the exception, down 0.2%. Hong Kong, Tokyo up 0.5%, Hong Kong up 0.33%, and Tencent ever so tightly into the green. Commodities, mostly red. Gold, 2,760. Brent, 78.78. Platinum, 9.66. And the green is palladium, 9.97. The rand is 18.48. Bitcoin, $1,002.900. And top 40 opening call. Red open, 110 points or 0.15% lower.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kenyanyana from Scope Prime. Kier, appreciate the early morning. We saw clicks earlier in the week, and the update was maybe a little light, but the market didn't much like it. I got to say, the Mr. Price update looked, I thought, really good, and I appreciate the stock has run hard over the last year or so, up well over 50%. A good update, but again, market not liking, off with 3% in trade yesterday. Your take on the Mr. Price update?
Yeah, Simon, you're speaking that Mr. Price has run up almost 50% in the year. And I mean, I'm thinking about a year ago where it was lagging some of its competitors like the TFG Group and as well as Truworths. And I think the market re-rated the stock purely at a level that they've bedded down some of their acquisitions and have truly become quite a diversified retail brand, having higher LSM groups as well as having the budget-friendly model. And I think that really bodes well for the business as it's 90% cash sales. And that really becomes very cash generative. And I just think right now it's priced for perfection. And that's why the market didn't like the performance.
I take your point. I mean, we've seen massive runs, as I said, I mean, across all sort of anticipation. And that's my second part. I mean, we saw really good retail sales for October. It was up 6.2% locally. November, even better, up 7.7%. Here's my fun fact. That's the highest level outside of COVID since 2010. I mean, we've seen good data, but my sense is that the market is like, well, yeah, we knew that was coming. We know rates are lower. We know inflation's down. And you know, the two-pot money was going to be coming. It's kind of in the price and expected.
You're correct. And I think if you look at the valuations, especially on clothing retailers, whether they be credit sales retailers or cash retailers like Mr. Price, they really are sitting on a very, very high valuations, above 20 for some of them. And I think once you get to the point where you start looking at the budget-friendly models, such as the Pepcos and as well as Mr. Price, you're even seeing even higher valuations, which I think is more indicative of where the economy is than anything else. Because if you're starting to see that at the budget-friendly models, they're sitting on 30 price to earnings, that means that people are buying down and it's really doing well for stocks like Pepco and as well as Mr. Price.
And does it, I mean, we're in as a country in a fundamentally different place. We just had 300 days of no load shedding. Would you be sort of, I don't know, optimistic, bullish, cautiously bullish for local consumers over the rest of 2025?
I think looking at where the interest rate environment is going to go, I think right now, looking at the inflation data coming in at the lower end of the 3 to 6 target band, actually coming in at 3% last time. And looking at that and expecting an interest rate cut from the SARB, I think that bodes really well for the SA consumer. And looking at people actually at economists as expectation for GDP growth, it's actually going to come in at more than 1%. I know sometimes they always say that, but it always gets revised down during the year. But I think this time I really am confident on the economy, and I think our stock market has pockets of value where people can start picking up some stocks.
Okay, we'll leave it. I like that. Yeah, absolutely. And if we can get that growth, although I'll take your point, the report's headlines this morning, 2.3, but it often fails to actually achieve the potential. We'll leave it there. Ken and Yama, Scope Prime, as always, appreciate the early morning. That's our question today. LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you bullish SA consumer for the year ahead? We've had some decentish updates, and certainly a lot of good news floating around. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Davina Dorkerton, Regent Business School. Davina, appreciate the time today. In a recent note you put out, you make a point, and this is pre-Trump, and I think we can put Trump aside for this point, that the global economy is at a pivotal moment. We have come through the pandemic now some 5 years ago, but interest rates, inflation, we really are, as a planet, in perhaps a space that we haven't been in a very long time.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And see, in terms of the rising inflation rates, it's so interesting to note that, you know, given the interest rates and the high inflation, it's the emerging economies, you know, have managed to be resilient through all of these, you know, negative macroeconomic indicators. So when I speak about emerging economies, I mean, for example, South Asia. Here we see India, we see China still managing despite, you know, geopolitical, you know, tensions with the US. We also find Japan is still, you know, successful. There's Vietnam, there's Thailand. These countries have all been resilient. They have become major contributors, for example, to the shareholders, to the IMF. That is how resilient they are. India has, despite the rising global inflation rates, India continues, according to the United Nations, to maintain a 6.6% growth and GDP. And this is over like the last two decades. On the other hand, we see that, you know, the rising inflation rates has taken its toll on the developed economies, especially, you know, when you look at Europe and the northern part of Europe, due there to the political tensions, the war between Ukraine and Russia, the ongoing war, you know, they have started to fall back in terms of economic output, economic growth. We see wage stagnation in so many of the European countries, something that was never seen and experienced before. And this, despite, you know, there's skilled labor in the sectors, if I can put it that way, like your technology and the finance. They earn good wages, but still there's this wage stagnation that's contributing to economic decline. So besides the high inflation rates, these other factors that we see emerging, for example, in Northern Europe. US as well has its own story, if I may finish off with them. You see, with the US, inflation is definitely a point to note, and, you know, it's a sore point. At the same time, though, the economy has experienced growth, and it has labor productivity. So this is what has kept the US economy afloat still. But of course, with that said and done, the inflation rate has to be dealt with, because we know that Donald Trump, his administration has taken over, and there's this proposal from his administration for fiscal stimulus. So that can further add to the increasing inflation rates there in the country.
And debt levels. And I really take your point around a lot of the emerging markets you talk about. But I mean, if we look at the US, if we look at Western Europe, the challenge that I have is we've got higher rates, debt's costing more, government debt is growing, and this needs less money for infrastructure, for healthcare, and critical components that, particularly in the developed economy, are a big line item in the budget.
Exactly. And you see, that is what has contributed there to decline. But when we're talking about the debt and the huge debt, we also see America definitely, as much as it's a growing economy, it has the biggest debt globally. And that is due to its high healthcare costs, you know, investments in the healthcare sector. So Europe as well, yes, high debt rates. We look at France, for example. France is really struggling, around like 70% of GDP when you look at the debt ratio. So it's actually looking into restructuring its pension system to help with the fiscal budget. So some of the really stagnating economies that's really in the red, I would say, is Germany. And that is due to economic decline as well as infrastructure regression. It has pulled back in terms of renewable energy. And that's what we see. It's fascinating to see that Europe, especially Northern Europe, that was once leaders in, you know, renewable energy projects and infrastructure, have now taken the back seat. In the sense that we always have to go back to the emerging markets because they are really doing well, like, you know, in having diversified their economies, in having become or moved away from being dependent on commodity exports, you know, due to geopolitical tensions and so forth. They have moved inward and they have diversified in the sense that they have invested, like I said, you know, in the renewable energy. They have moved towards e-commerce. They have moved towards digital banking and so forth. And that has started to bring up those economies. And when we look at the renewable energy, the emerging economies collectively have contributed 450,000 megawatts from renewable energy sources. Yes. And for example, when it came to the US, it regressed. It was on 109,000 megawatts. And Europe combined, the Northern Europe, is I think on 93,000, you know, definitely close to that value. So overall in the grid, the Asian countries have contributed more than half now. And we look at the whole global picture, Simon, it's so interesting. China contributes 2/3 to renewable energy. You know, so definitely all of these factors have contributed to the debt for sure, has contributed to this decline in investing in further projects in Europe, you know, for renewable energy. And a lot of it has to do with the tensions there right now.
And then almost, I mean, I started by quoting, you said a pivotal moment. There's almost a sense that we are seeing a shift to a degree, not a collapse, but a move from developed markets who are going to maybe stagnate or grow slower to emerging markets where we're seeing, and you talk around renewable energy, a huge part of it, younger populations in many cases as well.
Definitely. You touched such a poignant note. You know, the young developing workforce in countries like Asia, your South Asian countries, even here in Africa as well, contribute to labor productivity. They bring in the dynamism. They bring in the innovation. They have the energy for technological innovation. And they move in economies like in South Asia in a direction that contributes to the positively to the GDP.
We'll leave it there. Davina Dorkudin, Region Business School, really appreciate the time.
Give your money smoother returns with StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Craig Gradage, Gradage Mahura Investments. Craig is my go-to man on BEE deals. We've been talking Sasol a bunch. Someone on Twitter said to me, hey, what about the Sasol BEE scheme? Or maybe it is schemes. Craig, appreciate the time. The more that I dig around this, the less I understand that I actually know. What is the deal here? Is there two schemes? Is it just the one which trades on the JSE? What's the high-level detail?
Yes, good morning, Simon, and good morning to your listeners. So there are two deals. Initially, when Sasol first did the deal in 2008, there was Sasol in Zalo, which was a 10-year deal. That was a funded deal. And then they had a discounted scheme as well, which is known as Sol BE1. And that is Sol BE1 is the listed entity you just referred to in your introduction. So Sol BE1 simply discounted. If Sasol trades at 100 Rand, Sol BE1 would trade at anywhere between a 20 to 30% discount where the Sasol share price is trading.
Does it convert it sometime? Does it pay dividends?
No. So those shares rank pari passu with Sol shares, your Sasol ordinary share. So those investors have same entitlement to dividend as well as voting rights. So they are simply a discounted share. And where the discount emanates from is the fact that they can only be traded by black qualifying investors.
Correct. Yeah, it's on the JSE, but you need to be a black qualified investor. Okay, so that's the easy one, the Sol BE one, around that 20 to 30% discount. Do they have an expiry or are they perpetual?
So it looks like those are perpetual, and we'll talk about the other scheme in a minute. Those are going to convert at the end of their life to Sol BE 1 shares. So that implies that Sol BE 1 is the perpetual offering.
So then the other one is the Sasol Khanyisa. This is not listed. What's the details here? Because maybe this is the more complicated one that keeps tripping me up.
Yes, so significantly more complicated than Sol BE 1. So what happened is the initial deal in Zalo that matured at the end of 2018. And I think Sasol needed, well, leading up to the maturity date, it looked like that deal would end underwater. Mm-hmm. And as you know, with the BE legislation, you get points if your partners on the equity deal actually make a return. Mm-hmm. What happened is that as the deal got closer to maturity, the Sasol share price went on a bit of a run. And the Inzala went from being underwater to being reasonably profitable, particularly for investors that went in on day one. But the wheels were already in motion at Sasol. The head office to create a second scheme for Inzala shareholders, which they had expected would mature underwater. And as part of that whole sort of transition from Inzala to Khanyisa, Inzala shareholders were given an allocation of Sol BE 1 shares. I think it was 1 BE 1 for every 10 Inzalas. I might be wrong on that front. And then they were given free Khanyisa shares as well in exchange for their Inzala shares.
And as I understand, these have the potential to convert. I think it's 2028. I'm not sure what the T's and C's are, but there is a potential conversion to the Sol BE 1 shares.
So that's how the scheme liquidates, the conversion to value to value. So if your Khanyisa shares that you were given for free, if they're worth 100,000, then you would get 100,000 worth of Sol BE 1 shares at that point. That happens in 2028, as you correctly pointed out. In the interim, the Khanyisa shares themselves are not tradable.
That's a hold until then. Is there debt involved in that? Because as a rule, the debt is paid down from dividends and Sasol's struggling a bit with dividends.
Yeah, so Khanyisa is invested in Sasol South Africa. So not the listed Sol ordinary share. So no exposure to Lake Charles and some of the other stuff. Only Sasol South Africa. So a lot closer to the real cash generation engine behind Sasol. So investors have been getting a trickle dividend. Mm-hmm. The dividend's been reasonably decent. Well, the yield is in infinite because it costed you nothing to get those Khanyisa shares. And the balance, roughly 97% of the dividend that's being paid across to Khanyisa has been gone to settle the vendor funding that was put in place,
A last question. So the Sol BE ones, if you're a relevant person, you can buy it on the JSC. The Khanyisa, there is no OTC, or is there an OTC for it?
There's no OTC. There won't be an OTC. So on liquidation, you would then get your Sol BE 1 shares, which you can then trade on the JSC. And that, I think, would be good news because then there'd be a lot more Sol BE 1 shares in the market and a lot more holders. So perhaps a better price discovery and a narrowing of the discount.
Gotcha. Okay, that's an important point. You leave it there, Craig Gradage, Gradage Mahura Investments. Now we are way smarter. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Hannah Denoberger yesterday from Prescient Investment Management, talking about that CPI, which came in at 3%, and asked her also around the rate cuts. But we asked you on Twitter and LinkedIn, what did you expect after we saw 2.9% for November? Little over 40% of you said it would be higher. 30% said it would be around the same. The rest of you, a small number, but the rest were saying, no, maybe we can get inflation down. We got 3%, and let's be clear, the range is 3 to 6. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7.
Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobukli, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. GLP-1 drugs.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.